Shalom Aleichem. Today we're going to learn inside, basically. I prepared anyway a presentation to make it easier, but we're going to learn inside a part of a talk of the Rebbe. This talk was delivered actually in 1984, 1985. Different pieces that were put together afterwards and printed, so to speak, as a talk of the Rebbe. That means that the Rebbe did not say this completely one point after the other. Rather, a group of people just gathered together, put it together, and presented it to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe approved it as his words, so to speak, about how the Jews have to actually influence the non-Jews. We're going to learn two ways of this influence, of this way of sharing Torah, mitzvahs, and so on. And hopefully we're going to understand how we can see this in the Rambam itself, in the text of Maimonides, where he writes about how the Jews have to actually influence the non-Jews. He brings two ideas. So hopefully we're going to understand how these two ideas are actually connected to Abraham and Sarah, who, when they were born, they were Abraham and Sarai. And we will see exactly what happened over there and how the miracles that happened to the Jewish people are not only for the Jewish people, rather for all the nations of the world. So let's start. I just put over here in the screen the main ideas that I'm going to teach, but I'm going to read inside the text because I think it's interesting to see how the Rebbe presents it, not without my intervention in the middle. I have to translate anyway, but whatever. Let's go. So first of all, we're not going to start from the beginning of the talk of the Rebbe. That doesn't really bother me. The point is that the Rebbe, again, is explaining two miracles that happened on when Yitzchak was born. First of all, the names of Abraham and Sarah were changed. He was Abraham, and then he became Abraham with a hey in the middle, letter hey. And then Sarai became Sarah, and then Yitzchak was born. And this birth of Yitzchak had actually two different types of effect in the world. When Yitzchak was born, Sarah, she was quite old, 100 years old, 90 years old, I'm sorry, 90 years old, Abraham was 100, and Sarah was 90, and she gave birth to Yitzchak, and she nurtured Yitzchak, and not just Yitzchak, but other babies around the world, because people would say, nah, you didn't give birth, it's impossible, you're 90 years old, you're an old lady, and so on, so you just brought a small child from somewhere, and you know, and you say it's your son. It is not. So she actually gave milk of her milk to other children around the world, so everybody knew she actually gave birth. And later, 40 years later, after the birth of Yitzchak, Avram got married again after the passing of Sarah to Keturah. There's a whole discussion who Keturah was. It doesn't really matter right now. And he had other six children. Now, the truth is, Avram could not have children by himself. I mean, everybody knows. And when a couple can't have children, sometimes it's his fault, sometimes it's her fault, whatever, you know. Biologics, and I'm not going into the details of that. I'm not a doctor. But the point is that over here we have two people. None of them could give birth. Not Abraham and not Sarah. And Hashem, God, made miracles, and Sarah gave birth, Abraham gave birth, and so on. So, in order to understand the importance of the miracles that God made for Sarah and for Abraham, different miracles, and the effect these miracles had in the world, not just in them, Sarah gave milk and so on to other children immediately when Yitzchak was born. And Abraham, no, he had to wait 40 years. And afterwards, he had six other children that became part of the world and so on. So why is the difference between these two miracles? And what's the difference between Abraham and Sarah in their influence? So let's go. The Rebbe, in order to understand all of this, goes into the Rambam. This is a typical idea, typical work of the talks of the Rebbe. He brings proofs from different classical texts that basically, and I'm being a little bit vague on purpose, basically nobody can actually reject and say, no, I don't care what the Rambam says. Really? You don't care? So you're nothing. You don't know anything about Torah. You can't just say, I don't care what the Rambam says. Wait a second. You do care. So let's check on the Rambam. Let's see. We will understand all of these, the miracles and the influence and so on, when we actually learn the words of the Rambam when he talks about the seven Noahide commandments or the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach and so on. So the Rambam says like this, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rebbe quotes this text, Moshe Rabbeinu only gave the Torah as inheritance to the Jewish people. So the Torah is for the Jewish people, forget it. As it says, the Torah, the inheritance of the congregation of Yaakov, and not just the Jewish people, to all those who desire to convert among the other nations. You want to convert? Okay, so the Torah is yours also, no problem. As it says, the convert shall be the same as you, as a Jew, no problem. However, someone who does not desire to accept Torah mitzvahs should not be forced to, you know what, bye-bye, you don't want to be a Jew, no problem. You're not obligated to be a Jew. Judaism is not a religion that goes out to convert everybody, and everybody has to be a Jew, not necessarily. This is text number one of the Rambam. And then he brings another text in a later law, not in the same one, we will talk about this. By the same regard, Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to by the Almighty to compel all the inhabitants of the world to accept the commandments given to Noach's descendants. So the simple difference, without analysis even, very superficial analysis of these two laws, is the one is talking about Jews. You want to be a Jew? Go and convert. No problem. You don't want to be a Jew? So you're not obligated to be a Jew. And the second one is saying, fine, if you're not obligated to be a Jew, that's okay. However, the Jews have an obligation to teach how to live a Torah life without being a Jew. You don't need to be a Jew. You can live and so on. And God told Moshe Rabbeinu to go tell all the Jewish people, go and, as it says over here, compel, we will analyze this word a little bit, compel all the non-Jews to behave like the Torah wants. We have to understand, asks the Rebbe. Very simple question. Oh, I'm sorry, another piece of the Rambam. Anyone who accepts upon himself or herself, is the same thing, the fulfillment of the seven laws and is precise in their observance is considered the pious among the Gentiles. Hasidei umoisa oilam, says the Rambam, and will merit a share in the world to come. Very good. Again, you don't need to be a Jew. You can have your world to come without being a Jew. And this applies only when he or she is the same thing, accepts them and fulfills them because the Holy One, blessed be He, God, commanded them in the Torah. So it's not just because it makes sense not to steal, makes sense not to kill, and so on. You have to accept the Torah because God gave it to the Jewish people in Mount Sinai through Moshe Rabbeinu and so on, and inform us through Moshe Rabbeinu, our teacher, that Noach's descendants had been commanded to fulfill them previously. However, if he fulfills them out of intellectual conviction, because makes sense not to kill, not to steal, and so on, he's not a resident alien, I'm not going to explain this, not the pious among the Gentiles, and you're not even a wise person. This is what the Rambam actually says. Okay, text of the Rambam. The Rebbe asks a very simple question. Very simple question. The Rambam started saying that God gave the Torah to the Jewish people. As we saw in the first, I'll come back. Moshe only gave the Torah and mitzvahs as inheritance to Israel, to the Jewish people. So, if so, who cares about the non-Jews? Like, okay, just go do your thing, go learn your Torah, go fulfill your mitzvahs, and okay, whatever, there are non-Jews in the world, no problem. But the Torah is just for us. That's the first law. And then in the second law, he says, no, wait a second. We have an obligation to go and compel and tell the people, and they will have a short in the world to come, and so on. Hasidim is oilam, pious among the world, and so on. So we have to understand what's the connection over here of the non-Jews to the Torah, if the Torah is just for the Jews. So what's the connection of the non-Jews to the Torah? This is basically, and there are other places where the Rebbe talks about this in a different direction, but this is basically the question that the Rebbe asks over here, and he answers like this. I'll read it inside. We will explain this, as is explained in many other places, through a teaching of our sages. Our sages say that the whole creation is, why did God create the whole creation? Because he wants a Jewish people that are called something primary, and he wants a Torah that is also called primary. This comes from the word Bereishis. Those who know a little bit of Hebrew, Bereishis in itself, you can look at this idea is shared by Rashi in his commentary to the Torah. Bereishis in itself is written syntactically wrong, like it or not. So the Rashi explains, and there are many explanations about this, but the point is that Rashi brings base Reishis for two things. Base, letter base, is the second letter of the alphabet, Hebrew alphabet, and the value of that letter is two. For two things that are called Reishis, main, important, primary, and so on, Bar Elokim es Hashemayim v'Saaretz, God created the heavens and the earth. What are those two things that are called primary? So Rashi brings the Jewish people and the Torah. God wanted a world where the Jewish people would learn Torah. That means that the Jewish people and the Torah are not something added to the creation. So there's a creation, and there are also cats and dogs. Oh, very nice. But there could be a creation without cats and dogs. Yeah, but God wanted cats and dogs. No problem. The same thing would apply to the Jewish people. Oh, there's a creation. Oh, look, there's a people called Jews. Oh, okay, no problem. The world could exist without the Jews. No, you got it wrong. The Jews and the Torah are the essence of the creation. That's the words of the Rebbe. Therefore, after the Jews and the Torah, after that they exist, and God gave the Torah, and this line is the fundamental idea behind all of this. It doesn't look like, but pay attention. After there is a Jewish people, after there is a Torah, and God gave the Torah, Mount Sinai, and so on, there is nothing in the world, no order, no commandment, no nothing in the world that cannot go through the Torah and the Jewish people. Because again, on them depend everything, even the non-Jews, and even the seven laws of non-Jews. In other words, I will say the same thing that the Rebbe said, but just in other words. Now that we know that the reason why God created the world is because he wants the Jewish people learning Torah in the world, and the fact is that there are non-Jews in the world. Of course, it's full of non-Jews. Majority of people are non-Jews. So if there is a message, which the truth is that there is, but if there is a message to the non, from God to the non-Jews, it has to go through the Jewish people and the Torah. There's no such a thing as a message to the non-Jews without the Jewish people and the Torah. And we do know, without, even though it is not in the talk of the Rebbe, but I think it's an important addition, and we do know that every time that the human race, to call it somehow, got further from God, it became a disaster. Terrible disaster. The whole Shoah, Holocaust, wrongly called Holocaust. One of the things is that the ones who did it, the Nazis, the Yimach Shemam, their name should be erased and so on, they were not godly people. They were more intellectual people. They were not stupid. They were very smart. The most advanced civilization in the whole world at that time. Definitely. In science, in biology, in philosophy, and so on. And still, they took the wrongest decision around. We have to kill all these people and all that people, you know, all the Jews and all the blacks and all the homosexuals and all this. We have to call all the people, we have to kill them. How did you get to this conclusion? The intellect without basing in God can lead to such decisions. Yes, you have to be careful, very careful. So again, as soon as you disconnect from God, as soon as you disconnect from the Torah, you take wrong decisions, definitely. So again, the seven mitzvahs depend on Torah and depend on the Jewish people down here that they were given the Torah. And we have to be very careful in the Rambam that we learned before. The Rambam brings two, Maimonides brings two details. Detail number one, Moshe Rabbeinu commanded, because God told him so, to compel all the non-Jews, all the people in the world, to accept the seven mitzvahs and so on. That's detail number one. Detail number two, they have to do it because God said so in the Torah. And God told us through Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Rambam wrote this in two different laws. Let's go back a little bit and check it out. Oops, I'm sorry. This over here, this text over here, that is talking about the Jewish people, how they received the Torah, it's chapter number 8 in the Laws of Kings of the Rambam, law number 10. Okay, so it talks about the Jewish people, the converts, whomever wants to convert. And that Moshe Rabbeinu himself was told to tell the Jewish people, go compel all the non-Jews to fulfill their mission. Very good. Finished. Now let's go to Halacha 11. Law number 11. We changed law now. If a person wants to accept these commandments, so he's a pious among the Gentiles, and he has to accept the commandments because God told in the Torah and so on, apparently this is just a continuation of the previous law. And when the Rambam says law number 10 and then law number 11, it's not just because he didn't have enough room to write everything in one law. No, 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 no. It's because he's talking about two different things. That's why it's two different laws. In Hebrew, we call them dinim, laws. Two different laws, okay? Two different ideas, so you got it, two different laws. Apparently, from the fact that the Rambam did not comment or did not say as a continuation of, I'm going back, compel, the Jewish people have to compel all the inhabitants of the world, all the non-Jews and so on, to fulfill their commandments, the Rambam should have said immediately this idea that they have to, the non-Jews have to accept it because God said so in the Torah. No. The Rambam brought this idea in a different law. Again, first of all, go compel. Second law, oh, there's such a thing as pious among the Gentiles, and there's no compelling in this law. Not at all. No word compelling anything. It's just saying there's such a thing as pious among the Gentiles, and they have to accept it because God said to Moshe that he has to share this and so on. From the fact that the Rambam wrote this in two different laws, and he wrote this condition, yeah, they have to accept, in order to be a pious among the Gentiles, you have to accept it because God said in the Torah and so on. We can understand that this idea, it's a different idea than the previous one of compelling. So what do we have over here? Let's see. Yeah. What do we have over here? Again, law number 10 talks about compelling. Law number 11 says, no, there's such a thing, I'm sorry, I'm of pious among the Gentiles, and they have a share in the world to come, and they have to accept it only, there's a condition, and so on. Why two laws? Why two different laws? Apparently, could be perfectly in one law. You can arrange the text a little bit and put it into one law. No, the Rambam said there has to be two laws. From that fact, so we do see that there's something different in being spoken about in law number 10 than in law number 11. We're talking about two different cases. We're talking about two different ways that the Jewish people share Torah with non-Jews. Two ways, two ideas. What are these two ways? Like this. Way number one would be, okay, two ways of influence from the of the Jews on the non-Jews. One is that direct and one is indirect. Let's see. I'll say it in the words of the Rebbe. One way is influence through compelling. Compelling could be literal, or compelling could be with words. And even though over here is not quoted, but in other places the Rebbe says many times, Torah is derachea darchei noya mechol nesiveseya shalom, says the verse. The path of the Torah is Darchei Shalom, it's peaceful. Noyam, it's delightful. And the ways of the Torah are peaceful. So compelling doesn't mean take a bat, a baseball in your hand, and go to the Jew and say, hey, hello, there are seven laws. You like it? No. Boom. Next one. There are seven laws. You like it? No. Boom. No. This is not compelling. We're not talking about this. But whatever. There's one way of influence, compelling. Compelling could be even arguing. I don't know. I don't like the idea, but it could be. And the second way, it's an indirect way. It's an influence in a way that the non-Jew by himself, either with the help of the Jew or without the help of the Jew, it doesn't really matter, by himself or herself, comes to the recognition that you have to accept the mitzvahs, not just because they're the God. Yeah, I'll accept whatever he says. No. Because God told Moshe Rabbeinu in Mount Sinai, and so on. It's a different idea. Two different ways of accepting or incorporating, I don't know, putting into your life, incorporating in your life that there is such a thing as Judaism, Torah, and so on, and a message for non-Jews, of course. That's why the Rambam, let's just go back a little bit, that's why the Rambam wrote these two things in two different laws, talking about two ways of influence. Okay, let's see. The same things as the Rebbe, you can see in the Rambam himself later. In the last two chapters of the book, Mishneh Torah, the Rambam talks about Mashiach. What are the conditions for Mashiach? Who is Mashiach? What will he do? And so on. And he brings two different ideas in two different laws. Let's see. Law number one, so to speak. Oy. Law number one. At the end of chapter 11, over here, 11:4, it's a short chapter, the Rambam brings the following idea. If a king will arise from the house of David, will diligently contemplate the Torah, and so on, I cut the text, it's too long for us right now. He will then repair, this is the main thing, he will then repair the entire world, motivating all the nations to serve God together. As Zephaniah says, a famous verse, I will transform the people's pure language, and so on. Everybody's going to serve God. Everybody includes the non-Jews, of course. He says clearly, motivating all the nations to serve God together and so on. We will all together serve God. That's law number four in chapter 11 of the book of the Rambam, talking about Moshiach. Then, when you go to chapter 12, in the last law, the Rambam says something else. In that era, the era of Mashiach, there will be neither famine or war, nobody will be hungry, envy or competition, for good will flow in abundance, and all the delights will be freely available as dust. Okay. The occupation of the entire world will be solely to know God. Therefore, the Jews will be great sages and know the hidden matters, grasping the knowledge of the Creator according to the full extent of the human potential. As Isaiah says, the world will be filled with the knowledge of God, as the waters cover the ocean bed. This is the end of the book of the Rambam. The beginning, really, really, the beginning is about God, who's God, what's God, and so on. And the end is Moshiach. Now, we do see in this law a different kind of message, so to speak, that we saw, I'm going back on purpose, on the previous law. In the previous law, we talk about repairing the world, motivating the nations, so go do something, because we have to all serve God. And in this law, you don't see any repairing. You don't see any motivations at all. You just see, what will the people do? The occupation of the entire world, this includes non-Jews, will be solely to know God. There's no compelling, no repairing, no nothing. Just will happen by itself, so to speak. With this, the Rebbe explains the same point. Just a second. Okay. We said before. In law 11, there's a repairing, there's a compelling type of influence that the Jews will have on the non-Jews. And in the second law, chapter 12 and so on, we see something like more automatic. Still, it's related to the Jews. Why related to the Jews? Because the law talks about the Jews. The Jews will be great sages. Who are you going to ask the questions to? The Jews, of course, the great sages of the Jews. Not me, but whatever. Some other great sages. The point is that there will be an automatic service to God, the entire, all the human race, as the Rambam says, as was the Lashon, the occupation of the entire world, we solely to know God. But it's automatic. It's no compelling, no forcing at all. So we do see the same idea basically expressed in two places. I'm going back on purpose. Place number one is when the Rambam is talking about the non-Jews, specifically these chapters, chapter in the eight, the end of chapter 8 of Laws of Kings, chapter in 9 and 10 talk about the laws of non-Jews, and then chapter 11 and 12 talk about the laws of Mashiach. Parentheses that I've mentioned many times that you see on these the wisdom of the Rambam. The Rambam knew somehow, I don't know exactly how, I can understand he lived even in worser times than ours. I mean, in the power of the non-Jews on that time and in the religious wars and so on, in the year 1000 and so on. Now, the Rambam knew that in the really close to Mashiach, by the end, quote unquote, the end of times, whatever, close to Mashiach, we will be able to actually influence the non-Jews. That's why he wrote in the last chapters of Laws of Kings, right before Mashiach, he wrote the Laws of Non-Jews. He could have wrote it somewhere else. I don't know. It's not really related to the Laws of Kings. Like, we don't need a king to go in and teach the non-Jews. Actually, we don't have a king and we still do it. So why did the Rambam write the Laws of the non-Jews right before? End of chapter 8, chapter 9, 10, and then 11 and 12, Mashiach. Why? Because it's clear. Closer to the end, to the coming of Mashiach, hopefully speedily nowadays, closer to that time, the occupation of the Jewish people, what will it be to teach the non-Jews? And the Rebbe spoke about this so many times, mainly year 1984, 1985. He spoke so many times about this. Some people say that the Hasidim, the followers of the Rebbe, did not listen to this. Whatever. That's why it took so long. But whatever. I haven't seen this written. It's just people, you know, talking about it. Okay, so you see this idea of two types of influence in the loss of the non-Jews, and then you see the same thing in the loss of Mashiach. Exactly the same. According to all of this, we can understand that when Yitzchak was born, when Yitzchak was born, there had to be a change in the name of Abraham and Sarah. He was Abraham and became Abraham, and she was Sarai and became Sarah. It was necessary. Why? Because the name Abraham represents Avram, two letters, two words, Avram with two letters each one, which means a father of Aram. This is what Rashi brings from the Midrash and so on. Aram is like Syria today, sin, whatever. And he was a father just to that people. But Abraham represents Av Hamon Goim. The Torah says clearly in Parshas Lech Lecha. Av Hamon Goim, which means a father to many nations. So in order for the Jewish people to have the strength, the capacity to actually influence on the non-Jews, in both ways of influence, so there had to be a change of name in Avram and in Sarah. In Avram, stop being just a father for a small group of people. You have to be a father for every single human being around the world. Avram Goim, father to many nations. That's change number one. That means God giving us means everybody, through Abraham, the possibility of connecting to him, to God. And in Sarai, the same thing. Sarai, with a yud at the end, the yud in Hebrew means me. Sheli means this is mine. Shel mi ze, to whom belongs this? And you can say, shel blah, 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 shel fulan, plonim, this guy or that guy. But if you say sheli, it means mine. The yud means to me. So Sarai, what does the word Sarai mean? Sarah is like a minister, governor, and so on. A Sar, it's a governor. Sarah, it's a woman governor. So Sarai means authorities, governor, whatever, to me, just for me. You know, for the inside. Sarah, with a hey at the end, means to everybody. It's just a minister, just authority to everybody. So there had to be a change in the names of Abraham and Sarai to become Abraham and Sarah, in order that through them would be born Yitzchak. And this guy, Yitzchak, would be the forefather together with Yaakov and Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and so on. But this guy, Yitzchak, would be the first one born in a miracle way, in a miraculous way, because Abraham could not have children, Sarah could not have children. They together, of course they couldn't, and they had Yitzchak. And this miraculous way of being born is what gave the strength to the Jewish people. For what? To be a father to many nations, to influence other people, and to be authority, so to speak, to all. Not authority in the way that I need servants. I don't need servants. That's not the point. And even there are people that really get angry with the Talmud. You know, there's a place in the Talmud that says that every Jew will have like 2,800 servants that will do all kinds of things for them and so on. And the Rebbe once spoke in a meeting, whatever, about this Gemara, this piece of the Talmud, and even laughing. The Rebbe said, I don't know why people would do with, I don't know what people would do with so many servants. Like, what do? You have to give them food, you have to give them place to sleep, and I don't know what anyone would do with this. Clearly, it's not a physical thing. It's not like a reality. I need 2,800 people around me to do what? I would kick them all out. Just leave me alone. Don't bother me anymore. But do you need anything now? You want a cup of water? You know what 2,000 people around you is? Every day, every time? When you go to sleep, when you wake up, when you go to the bathroom? Don't bother me, please. I need to be alone a little bit. So again, clearly, this doesn't mean like a physical people around you all the time. It doesn't make any sense. Nobody would need so many, I don't know, the kings of England, if they have so many servants and so on. I don't know, and I don't care, but whatever. Clearly, it's not a physical thing. Nobody knows, and this is what the Rebbe said. I don't know what the Gemara, what the Talmud is talking about. I have no idea. Makes no sense. Not at all. Okay, having said all of that, let's move on. About Yitzchak being born in a miraculous way. According to all of these, we're going to understand the change of name. Again, Abraham and Sarah. Because in the beginning of the existence of the Jewish people in the world, when Yitzchak was born through Abraham and Sarah, there had to be a stress in the fact of the existence of the Jewish people. It's not a detail in the creation, rather they're like the objective in the creation. And this is the reason why the birth of Yitzchak was in a miraculous way, in such a way that affected, as I said, I mentioned before at the beginning, affected the non-Jews also. And in two ways, in a way of Sarah and in a way of Abraham. In the way of Sarah, many people, many women that could not have children had children because of the influence of Sarah. Many sick people actually got cured. That's what the Midrash, our sages, bring. And many prayers were actually answered because of the merit of Sarah. And there was a lot of happiness, joy in the world because of Sarah. All of this even brought to the idea of Sarah nurtured with milk and so on to other children. So Sarah clearly had an influence on the rest of the world, a clear and immediate influence. On the other way, Abraham, the kindness, so to speak, of God, the miracle of God with Abraham when Yitzchak was born, this caused that later, 40 years later, Abraham had other 6 children. Because the idea is for the Jewish people to be able to influence the non-Jews, there had to be a miracle done by God in a way that the non-Jews would actually feel this miracle itself. The non-Jews would understand that the reason they exist also is through that there's a Jewish people and there's a miraculous birth of Yitzchak and there's a Torah given to the Jewish people that had to be shared with the non-Jews and so on. Everything has to go through the Torah. Everything has to go through the Jews learning the Torah itself. And the Rebbe brings another, between brackets, another interesting idea where you see the same thing. Our sages tell us that when the Torah was given to the Jewish people, there was a voice of God in the whole world. And everybody really knew that something was going on. So our sages say that the kings of the idolaters of that time, they were so scared, they didn't know what was going on, they got everybody together to Bilam. You know, there's a parsha. Parsha's Balak, Bilam, Balak, cursing the Jewish people and so on. So everybody went to Bilam. And they asked, what is this thing that's going on? Amazing voice in the world. We don't understand. What's going on? And Bilam told them, they thought there was going to be another flood in the world. What's going on? And Bilam told them, no, don't worry. There's a precious treasure that God is giving to his people, to the Jewish people. Don't worry. Yeah, the whole world got influenced, so to speak. The whole world knew that God was given the Torah. So we see the same thing, not just in the Jewish people, like Yitzchak being born, miracles that affected the rest of the world, but we see also this in the Torah itself. According to this, we can answer another question. We know that there's a rule. God doesn't make miracles just like that. Parentheses, the Rebbe doesn't bring this, of course. Many people pray and ask for miracles. And it's not bad, you know. You can ask for whatever you want. That's why God is God and he can do whatever he wants. It's not limited to us. And people ask for miracles and they pray and so on. But you have to know that there's a rule. The rule is, God is not just going to make a miracle because of that. Because he makes miracles. No. We know he can, but he's not just going to do it like that. For free, so to speak. And what does that mean, for free? You're going to have to work on yourself. When you ask God for something, think, how can I improve in my service to God? What can I change in my life to get closer to God? And then, in the merit of this change that I'm making, God, please give me a miracle, give me this and give me that, and so on. Of course, God is going to decide whatever he wants to do. It doesn't depend on us in that case. But the minimum you have to do is offer something for free. God doesn't make miracles for free. So let's go back. Again, based on this rule, God doesn't make miracles for free. Now, why did he have to make a miracle for Abraham and Sarah to have a child? If God made the rules of nature and he can do whatever he wants with the rules of nature, why did he change the rules of nature that Abraham cannot have children and Sarah cannot have children for this birth? What's the need for this birth? And furthermore, okay, if you want to say that the Jewish people are a miracle people and so on, so they got born, I don't know how to say this. Whatever, they were born. Oh, that's the way. They were born in a miraculous way. Very nice. Why did this miracle of the birth of Yitzchak had to influence others? Wait a second, just keep it in the family. Abraham, Sarah, there was a private miracle over there. Okay, Yitzchak was born. Okay, I got it. It had to be in a miraculous way because the Jewish people is a Jewish, it's a miraculous people. Okay, very good, very nice. But why the rest of the people? Why Sarah nurturing other people? Why prayers being answered? Why all of this? And Abraham having other children later with Keturah, other six nations. Why? So the Rebbe says like this. This miracle is not a added miracle to the birth of Yitzchak. The fact that the birth of Yitzchak influenced other people is not a new miracle. In other words, the influence that the birth of Yitzchak generated in the rest of the world, in the non-Jews of that time and so on, is not another miracle, but it's just the same miracle of Yitzchak being born. Why? It's just a continuation, so to speak. It's just a consequence of the miracle of Yitzchak being born. Why? Because Yitzchak being born was not just a family miracle, so to speak, for Abraham and Sarah and so on. Rather, it was a miracle for every single person in the world. That's why Abraham was Ava among Goyim. He's the father to many nations. That's why Sarah is a minister, whatever, an important person for everybody. Because the reason why the world was created is not just for the Jews to keep the Judaism for themselves. Yeah, that's true. Bereishis, Beis Reishis, for two important things. God created the world and so on. Yeah, very good. But then, why are there non-Jews? If it's just for Jews, so erase all the non-Jews from the world, just make Jews. And the world was created for the Jews to learn Torah. Okay, so there are people that learn Torah, people that don't learn Torah. Oh, so the people that learn Torah have to teach the people that don't learn Torah and so on. But that's not the way the world was created. No. There are Jews and there are non-Jews. And if you're going to tell me that the Jews are the reason why the world was created, so again, the question is, why are there non-Jews? What's the reason for being over there? And the answer the Rebbe is giving over here, even though the Rebbe doesn't talk directly about this, but the way I understand it, the answer that the Rebbe is giving is very simple, powerful, but very simple. Look, it's true, the world was created for the Jews to learn Torah, but it doesn't end over there. You see that when the Jews were born, which is the beginning of the Jewish people, is actually with Yitzchak, He's the first. He's called the first Jew. Abraham also is called in some ways the first Jew, but Yitzchak was the first one born and in a miraculous way, and he was circumcised on the eighth day, and so on. So in many ways, also Yitzchak is the first Jew. He was born in a miraculous way, and that miracle affected the rest of the entire nations of the world. Everybody. Through the name of Abraham, through the name of Yitzchak, through the miracles done for Sarah. I'm sorry, I said the change of the name of Abraham, the change of the name of Sarah. I said wrong, I said Yitzchak. And through the miracles done for Abraham, the miracles done for Sarah, we see that there was an influence in the rest of the world. And again, we did learn in the Rambam himself that the part of the mission of the Jewish people closer to the times of Mashiach, that means now, is to, in two ways, compel, teach, so they can understand, they can learn, they can reach this, make it available, translate it, explain it, and so on, so they also understand it. Because of why, again, let's go back, the occupation of the entire world would be to know God. So we have to reach this. We have to do something. The Jewish people have to do something for this to happen. It's not just going to happen like that. Suppose every single teaching of the Judaism is in Hebrew. Okay, if you know Hebrew, you're fine. But what if you don't? Most of the non-Jews don't know Hebrew. So they're never going to get this. Impossible. So you have to translate and explain and make it available in their language, in the way they understand it, and so on. That's the part of the mission of the Jewish people, again, close to the end of the times, quote-unquote, to the coming of Mashiach. In the words of the Rebbe, as I just explained, there's no additional miracle, so to speak, when Yitzchak was born. No additional miracles. Rather, it's a continuation of the same thing. There has to be an influence of the Jewish people in the non-Jews. That's why they're there, to get closer to God. Now, in this influence, and in this miracle of the birth of Yitzchak, and this influence the nations of the world, there are two details, as explained before, the way of Abraham, quote-unquote, and the way of Sarah. Sarah was an immediate influence. People got nurtured, and people were remembered, and so on. And Abraham was later, let's say, later influence, so to speak. And these two things are, these two miracles, so to speak, of Abraham and Sarah are, we could say, says the Rebbe, are the source of the two ways of influence that the Jews have to influence the non-Jews. According to the difference between Abraham and Sarah, Abraham is called Av Hamon Goyim, the father of many nations, father to many nations. What does that mean? This indicates that there are many nations, there's a whole world, like the Rambam brought before, entire world, occupation of the entire world, and therefore, there has to be an influence in a way that there was a concrete activity in Avram that he had to do something in order to influence all these many nations and so on. The Rebbe brings over here, he got married to a second wife after the passing of Sarah, and he had other six children and so on. So the emphasis over here is that there has to be an activity. Abraham had to do something about it. He got married and he had children and so on. Why? Because we're talking about Ham ongoing and many nations, many people, entire world, and so on. That's the influence in a way of Abraham. And then there's an influence in a way of Sarah. The Rebbe explains like this. Sarah means, again, minister to all, authority to all, and so on. And the definition of kingship is that the king is separated from the rest of the people. It's like the king, above the rest of the people. Therefore, the activity of Sarah on the rest of the nations of the world that came through or together with the birth of Yitzchak was not in a way of acting and doing something, rather automatically. When Sarah gave birth, automatically many women were remembered and many prayers were answered. It doesn't say that Sarah did something about it. She didn't do anything. because she represents something even above Abraham in this case, something that is removed from the rest of the people, and there's no activity that she had to do. And this goes together with, going back, these two ideas that Rebbe brought before. First of all, there's an influence of, in a way of compelling. There has to be an activity, talk to people, do something about it, and so on. And then there's an, this is Abraham. This is the way of activity of Abraham. He got married, he got children, and so on. And he's the father to many nations, and it says, entire world, many nations. In Sarah, there's an indirect activity. Sarah is more like the king, or queen, whatever, like the queen. She's removed from the rest of the people. She does, and automatically, whatever she does has an effect automatically in the rest of the people, not because she actually acted on the people themselves. This is basically what I thought would be interesting in the talk of the Rebbe. The point is, there's a lot to learn. We have to go and learn. We have to know that there are resources. The resources are there, are available, and we have to dig. You know, there's an example brought in Hasidus about this idea. There's a Mayan. The Mayan means like where the water, the source of the water, really deep in the earth, the source of the water, it's over there. And if you get to the water or not depends actually on you. If you're going to really dig deep, you will see the source of the water. If you don't dig deep, you will never find it. But it's still in the earth. So the information is there, the resources are there, the ideas are there, the rabbis are there, whatever. You just have to dig. It depends on you. It depends on you.